Thank you, Andrew. Actually, if I'd known we were going to have that hymn before what I was going to say, perhaps we could have just stayed with that. So many good words there. What's the difference between a hero and a coward? Or between a heroine and a coward? Or cowardess, perhaps. Matthew Paris, who has been quoted quite a few times in recent sermons, suggests that the difference is a small step sideways. I guess what he's thinking about is a coward may move themselves out of danger, or a hero might move themselves into danger to act for somebody. Small actions can have big consequences in terms of direction, both for good and for ill. And we'll come back to that a bit later. But as Andrew says, we're in the middle of a series, and I will aim to speak on the title, and I will also draw on the passage and some of the surrounding passages. But today's title or theme does present a few problems, which I'll elaborate. My wife suggested that the title was actually going to be quite a difficult challenge, not to end up making most of the congregation feel guilty and depressed. And if I wanted to make lots of people feel guilty and depressed, I could perhaps have stayed at home with the family, because they're probably more used to it. And I'd also like to put across a more positive message rather than a negative one. And actually, the title also rather presupposes some active sin in our lives. And I'd rather not believe that about you. But I know, looking at my own life, that you would be disappointed. I think Stuart said something similar a few weeks ago as well. There's also the issue that we're looking at actions, and actions lead to habits going forward. And I do need to leave Andy and the following week's speakers something to talk about as well. And also, looking backwards, we've come from looking at thoughts and words. And if you've been paying attention, and more importantly, if we've been putting into practice what we've heard, then our actions should by now already be in quite a good shape. So are we looking at these topics in the right order? Now, Tony stated this last week, but this might be easier to visualise with a diagram, which I hope Sarah will put up for me, which I hope you can see. So we've got a nice linear diagram here. We've got thoughts, which obviously guide our words. Our words guide our actions, what we say we will do. Hopefully we do. Our repeated actions lead to our habits, and our habits build our character, which leads on to our destiny. And in fact, we've just used the first part of this in the confession, haven't we? When we've said, or we've confessed, in thought and word and deed. But where do our thoughts come from? Surely from our character. So is this diagram correct? Perhaps we don't need a linear sequence, we actually need a circular one. So whether we start with our thoughts or our character, as the one modifies the other, we should hopefully go round a loop. And as we do that, we change, we grow, we mature. Now, obviously, an understanding of one's final destiny, which I've taken off this slide, should also help us with that kind of circular or iterative process. But I've taken that off because that is our final destiny, and that's sort of outside the circle. But there's still something else wrong with this representation, and it is just a representation. Let's not get too hung up with the diagrams. There's no source in this picture outside of oneself. So if I go around this circle, I may end up being true to my original character, and there is some value in that, in being honest with one another and with ourselves, but I'll never get away from my fallen, unreformed, sinful human nature. And actually, this shows you what the problem is for the humanist, if you like, a humanist being a positive sort of atheist who thinks that mankind can solve all of his own problems. But as Christians, we have hope. We're not stuck with the character that we were, if you like, born with our sinful human nature. We can be open to God's influence from the outside. If I could have the next slide, thank you, Sarah. And either through prayer or through our fellow Christians working upon us, God can also work actively on us as well, and also by the Holy Spirit working within. So we can have God's dramatic intervention within our lives that doesn't leave us stuck with what we were originally born with, our original sin. Okay, well, just before I go on, perhaps it's also worth making the comment that people can also open themselves up to malign influences as well, which would give you a kind of negative cycle. Well, that's a re-emphasis of the whole series, and hopefully that's helpful to look at it in that form. Let's move on to today's topic, which is detoxifying our actions. And there is no help for it. This is perhaps a difficult subject. And Paul says, doesn't he, in verse 3 here of Ephesians chapter 5, "But among you there must not be even a hint of sexual immorality or of any kind of impurity or greed, because these are improper for God's holy people." Tony mentioned quite a lot about holiness in the first sermon in this series, which started us off. Holy, being set apart. Now, there's one name that I think is going to get mentioned in churches quite a lot across the country this morning, other than Jesus, hopefully, and that is probably going to be Tiger Woods, and it would be difficult to perhaps touch upon these subjects without bringing his name up again as he's in the news. Stuart said, I think, when the news first came out about this, that it is difficult to judge, and obviously we shouldn't. One doesn't know what temptations come in the way of a man like that who has so much money, so much power in a way, so much influence. God has promised that we will not be tempted beyond what we can bear, and where we are tempted, he will provide a way out, Paul has said in Corinthians. Paul also talks about impurity here in verse 3, and he goes on to say in verse 12, "For it is shameful even to mention what the disobedient do in secret. So to save my blushes, let's not." But perhaps there is a good example from actually quite early on in the Bible. If you the well-known story of Joseph in Genesis chapter 39. Perhaps an unusual example, actually, of a man being seduced by a woman. More probably and more often, the problem is the other way around. I think another couple of footballers are also in the news this weekend for issues of marital infidelity. But if you remember the story of Joseph, when Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him, and Joseph said that he wasn't going to sleep with her, even though she nagged him day after day. And eventually she arranged to send the servants away so that she was alone with him, and she tried to seduce him, and he ran off, even leaving his cloak behind. So he ran off without his dignity, if you like, and his reputation. Tony suggested last week that sometimes the worst things to cope with are the assaults on our reputation when you cannot answer back even though you are in the right. Well, we'll come back to Joseph in a bit. What about greed, which Paul also mentions in this verse? The MP's expenses are also back in the news this week, and we also have the examples in the Old Testament. For example, Achan, I think, was also mentioned recently, who took what should have been set aside for the Lord from the conquest of Jericho, and Ananias and Sapphira in the New Testament, who actually lied about what they already owned and had no reason to lie at all, but they claimed that they had given more to God than they had. And they all died and had no inheritance in the kingdom of God. Well, that's rather obvious greed, but what verse 5 seems to be suggesting is this is other types of greed. Greed that puts God first. Puts other things before God. So you put those things first. Things like wealth, career, fame, power, maybe even family and home, if that becomes the idol which you worship and that's the thing that you invest in. Jesus says, doesn't he, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Or to turn it around, what that's really saying, or another way of what it's saying, is that what your heart really values, those are the things that you invest in. If you like, it's the action side of what Tony said last week when he was quoting Jesus, "The mouth speaks from the overflow of the heart." That is what is revealed. And while we're talking about the mouth speaking from the overflow of the heart, what about swearing or obscenity, which Paul also mentions in verse 4? "Nor should there be any obscenity, foolish talk, or coarse joking, which are out of place, but rather thanksgiving." I mean, it should go without saying that a lot of these things have no place amongst Christians. We have a bit of a family cliche, I suppose, at home. Whenever any of our children say anything which is perhaps a little colourful, the expression is, can we please have a bit less of the casual swearing? I have to say, it's all very mild. You really don't need to worry about it. But we do try to impress upon them not to even start saying anything that goes along those lines. And actually, I did speak to my daughter this week when she was coming out with some euphemisms for stronger words. And I said, well, the problem with that is if you use euphemisms, people will assume at other times that's what you say. When she was a lot younger, she was in the car with me. The only time I've ever crashed the car, and it was my fault, I actually reversed into something in an empty car park, which obviously takes some doing. But the interesting thing is that whenever this story comes out, people always ask her, what did Daddy say? That's always what they want to know. And you can't stop my daughter from repeating exactly what was coming. And I did ask her this morning, she can't remember, so in a way I'm let off. But Tony was right, wasn't he, when he said last week, it's in the unguarded moments, when we're tired, when we're stressed, emotional, maybe even when we're uninhibited, because perhaps we're drunk, that perhaps more of our true nature comes out. Let's move on. Paul also talks about foolish or silly talk. And I'm just going to dwell on this, although it might seem to be trespassing on Tony's sermon last week to do with words. But one of the translations actually has this down as gossip. One of my favourite songs, actually, is about gossip, rather unusually. It's actually a George Harrison song. You probably won't have come across it. But it's called The Devil's Radio. And actually, I think that's quite a good summary, quite a good way of defining gossip, The Devil's Radio. Because you have to take action to walk gossip around a department or around your place of work or with your neighbours, because there's no other reason for sharing it. It's not like it's information that people need to know. So you do actually have to take an action to do that. Now, I've talked about some sins that, or some things that might be more difficult for men, and perhaps this is one that's perceived to be a problem for women, or more of a problem for women than men. Studies have tended to show that women use more words in a day than men. Certainly by the time I've come home from work, I've used up my store. It's the annoyance of my wife. But actually, analysing the content of what is said in unguarded moments, and it's amazing how quickly people forget that they're wearing microphones, apparently there isn't much difference in the content between men and women. So maybe we both have something to learn there. And in a Christian context as well, sometimes we can dress up gossip as concern. I just thought you ought to know about so-and-so's situation for prayer, you understand, that type of thing. But what is the motive? Verse 29 is a very good test of all sorts of motives in these situations, where Paul says, only speak what is helpful for building others up according to their needs. If it's not helpful, then don't say it. I'm sure, by the way, actually, that the prayer ministry team will be very confidential in anything that you share with them. And in fact, if they're not, then they will very soon be out of business. So have no concerns there. Let's just briefly look at coarse joking, as Paul translates. This is translated. Again, this isn't probably an issue for Christians themselves, but the problem may be more in a social setting, especially if you're in a kind of mixed setting or you're with non-Christian friends. It's quite easy to be drawn into this kind of thing. And then what do you do about it? Do you make a stand and be thought to be prudish? You might need to maintain relationships, so it's difficult to set a difference. You probably have to decide on a case-by-case basis. One of my colleagues recently at work, who's not a Christian, was saying that he was trying to find some entertainment to watch. He was going to watch one of these new comedies that was on, and he said he was offended by the language that was in it and the nature of the jokes. It was not just, it wasn't funny, it was actually obscene, and he was disgusted. And if he was, then we certainly should be as well. And finally, I'd also like to just drop down out of the passage onto verse 18. That lovely verse. Actually, it's a pun, a sort of pun in a way, that seems to have survived the translation process. Do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. Quite a nice sort of pun, if you think, on Spirit, play on words there. And perhaps we could also include in this other illegal drugs as well. Tony said last week and pointed out, if you're drunk, it affects everything you do. You can't think straight, you can't talk straight, you can't walk straight. I guess that's why the traffic officer, policeman, gets people to try and walk in a straight line when he suspects they've been drinking. And you can't act appropriately. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit? Now, he's talking there in a context of sexual immorality, but surely this also applies to literally poisoning our bodies with harmful chemicals, whether it's too much alcohol, illegal drugs, or, I don't know, maybe even a poor diet. Well, you may not feel that many of these things are relevant to you or to us. You know, we're not an adulterer, not fiddling the company expenses, don't swear, don't gossip, don't tell coarse jokes, don't have a problem with alcohol, drugs, gambling or pornography, and you haven't killed anybody. So is Paul's message relevant to us? And it's probably easier for us as Christians to perhaps avoid some of these obvious or outward sins. There's a certain social pressure amongst us, perhaps. And actually, I think that can be a good thing. There's a sort of accountability in a way. Sadly, some Christians do fail in these areas. I have been in churches not unlike Armour where the minister has said, you'll be surprised how often he's had someone in his office or study counselling him on these type of issues. And I was going to say that if any of those issues, serious issues perhaps, are issues, then please do speak to Andrew or Stuart or Tony or the prayer team. I won't suggest that Andrew's waiting to take your call, but you know, do get some help in the right place. Actually, I've also just realised that by saying that, I've probably stopped Andrew and Tony and Stuart being spoken to by the rest of the congregation for probably the rest of the series, because people will assume that you're confessing to something very significant. So the rest of us will not judge any conversations we see people having with them or the prayer ministry team. Otherwise, they'll be in Coventry for a good long time. And I also think maybe it's easier for folk who are in desperate straits to actually get their problems sorted out. I've read quite a few testimonies from reformed drug addicts, I suppose, who have often made the point that they recognised if they didn't deal with their habit, this is in a moment when they were kind of lucid and thinking straight, if they didn't deal with their habit, they were going to die. And I guess we hear about the ones who've sorted themselves out and the other ones, their habit probably has killed them. But those of us with more minor issues, more minor failings, if we can put it like that, it can be difficult to bring those things forward. I use the words advisedly there, of course, because the Bible says that all of our petty sins are going to send us to hell. So I don't have time to talk about bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander. I guess perhaps we covered that in gossip. And malice. These are all back in verse 31 of chapter 4. And it'd be rather depressing if I went through that list. But some of these kind of what you might call slow burn issues can be just as toxic in our lives and to our spirits. And Tony spoke on this in the first sermon in the series quite a bit. Particularly issues, I think, like self-pity and lack of forgiveness, which can lead to bitterness. We need to get those things sorted out, and they are just as important. Perhaps there isn't a crisis that brings it to a head, but it still needs dealing with. Okay, so we've looked at some major issues and some other things. What can we do for ourselves with God's help? Just to finish off, three things then. Paul suggests really the obvious negatives. So going back to chapter 4 and verse 27. He says, do not give the devil a foothold. I've just started reading a book on actually the Indian Mutiny, and the author in that comments several times the great cities of India were still walled at the time, and he comments on the battles. It was much easier to stop the enemy at the gates of the city whilst they were outside the walls, because once the enemy got inside, it became a different type of battle. You get different casualties. The civilian population gets caught up with it. And even if you throw the enemy out, you then have damage within the city, which then has to be repaired. And it's the same with our hearts and our minds, isn't it, if we let the devil get a foothold. And if you throw him out, even then you still have to cope with that damage. You have to live with the consequences of that. Better not to let him get a foothold in the first place. The MEB actually translates this as don't give the devil a loophole, thinking perhaps of a thread in some in a garment or clothes which catches and tears, and if it's not dealt with, it gradually unravels the whole garment. Perhaps, not perhaps our modern ones, but perhaps the older woven ones. And you can put a patch on it, but it's not the same again, is it? It's got a blemish on it. Much better not to let it happen in the first place. Keep the enemy out at the gate. Don't let him have a foothold. Paul also says in verses 15, 16 and 17, he sort of sums it up as saying, live carefully, be wise, don't be foolish. Why was King David tempted into adultery with Bathsheba, which also actually led to murder as well? The reason was he put himself in the way of temptation. He was in his palace at the middle of the day, looking out where the women were bathing, not out on the battle line with his soldiers, which was where he was supposed to be. If you watch certain television channels, some of the content on some of them will be completely unsuitable. And if you watch some of the other television channels at particular times of day, you'll also see things which are violent, indecent, inappropriate or risque comedies, I've already referred to, perhaps online gambling as well, which can be an issue for people. But it doesn't have to be late at night either. Some daytime television, I understand, is quite bad as well. I think verse 31 would probably be quite a good summary of things like some of these daytime chat shows, which feature quite a lot of bitterness, rage, anger, even brawling, slander, and every form of malice. You know, these things are just not appropriate to feed our minds with or to watch at all. Paul says, live carefully. And I think there is an element of knowing our own weaknesses and making sure we don't put ourselves in the way of that. But sometimes, however well you have resisted the devil, however careful you have been, you simply just have to flee, as Joseph did, if we return to his story. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6, flee from sexual immorality, and because in verse 3 he says, there must not be even a hint of such things amongst you. Joseph fled, leaving his clothes behind, and I wonder whether he was taunted for his lack of virility or masculinity, perhaps, by the other prisoners. Was his character assassinated because he refused the advances of a rich and powerful woman? He kept himself pure, but it cost him quite a lot. Did he regret his decision while he languished in Pharaoh's prison for all those years? Sometimes the brave thing to do is to run away, and you may have to not care what is said about you. So you don't look at those images that your colleague has found on his PC at work. You don't join in with those crude jokes in the coffee room. You don't pass on that gossip. And we might have to do that, not just because it's the right thing to avoid those things, but also, are we prepared to admit our own weaknesses that we need to protect ourselves? Interestingly, Joseph did all of those things, and his character actually showed through. So if we hold on to those things, in fact, our character will be right. Well, I must just finish off, and actually Andrew, I think, has already said most of the things that I wanted to say throughout the service, but I've tried to stick to the series, to the topic, and to this passage, and I've tried to give some practical indications, but I must end with some reassurance, Because whatever our failings have been in the past, whatever actions we regret, if we put our trust in Jesus, we can be, in fact we are, forgiven, as we've just prayed in the confession. And it's there in verse 32 as well, isn't it, of chapter 4. Well, I said I'd like to try and promote the positive things. Obviously, there's lots of acts of service we can do as positive actions, and that really needs a sermon in itself. Lots of our actions are actually positive words, which again Tony touched upon last week. And Paul says this as well. If you look at verse 25, he says, speak truthfully to one another. Verse 29, build one another up. Verse 4 of chapter 5, respond with thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is always a very good thing for putting aside negative feelings and emotions. And especially amongst the Christian community, if we go down to verses 19 and 20, speak to one another with psalms, hymns and spiritual songs. Sing and make music in your hearts to the Lord, which is what we've been doing this morning, surely. And finally, he also says in verse 32, be forgiving and compassionate, be understanding. Let's be aware of each other's weaknesses and frailties. Andrew said this right at the start of the service, so thank you for that. Let's not put temptation in the way of one another. And when folk do fail, let's have some understanding for their frailty, bearing in mind our own lives probably wouldn't come up to such scrutiny as well. I'm just going to finish off with Hebrews 10, verses 24 to 25. The author to Hebrews says, let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. That's actions. Let us not give up the habit of meeting together, as we are here this morning, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. I think that's managed to cover actions and habits and destiny as well in the final verse. Andrew.